Hello everyone, and welcome to Dark Natter, the podcast that dreams are made of. I'm John Richter.
And I'm Liam Martin.
Is that your impression of... Wow. Well, that's a spoiler, because everyone will instantly recognise you, that was.
Absolutely. So let's not tell them now. You carry on.
We are clearly doing an episode about Elmer Fudd. No, I couldn't think of a punchline. Freddy Krueger. We're doing Freddy Krueger. It's the series finale, and we've decided to do... Because it's Halloween when this goes out, we thought, who better to star, you know, a Series 2 Dark Natter season... series final episode than the Springwood slasher himself, the Dream Master, Freddy Krueger, and the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. There you go, that's what we're going to be talking about today.
You ugly little prick.
He doesn't even see, that's not even an accurate quote.
Do you need to explain what we do? Sorry, because I messed it up
You didn't. If anything, you've improved it. Yes, we, of course, for anyone who's newly tuning in and hasn't immediately turned it off, what do we do? We discuss, dissect, slice, dice and dissect our and your favourite works of dark fiction to decide whether they are worthy of a place in the hallowed, haunted, horrible, hellish, hooligan-riddled halls of the Hall of Pain.
Again, that was Freddy.
It was decent, I would say.
Yeah, thanks.
He doesn't. He's not really got that much of a catchphrase, has he?
I thought that. I thought he. I could have sworn he did, but no, not really.
Like, there's one. He says something. There's one in one film. He's like, "You're all my." Well, that's not a good impression, is it? You're all my children now. Yeah, that's not really a catchphrase. If you only say,
"Well, I'm
once.
Having it that you ugly little prick," is his catchphrase.
Is it? Even though you've only just invented it.
No, he says you ugly little shit, but I've modified it and improved it.
You have. He does, I mean, it is a pretty misogynistic set of films, isn't it? He does call an alarming number of people, bitch!
Yeah. Actually, I almost did that. I almost, when I did the laugh, I almost said the B word, but I thought, nah.
I mean, we'll get into that, won't we, I suppose? It's like the old sort of... old school slasher misogynistic thing, but we'll come to that. Before I launch into the usual, there are 9 movies, and here's what year they came out. Blah blah blah. Frantically Wikipediaing in the background. Is there anything you would like to add, Liam, to today's topic?
Here's one for the outtakes. Ha ha, bitch.
I'll make sure I.
You can keep it in. That. It's up to you. If you want to ruin me, you can keep it in. If not.
Your impression has got better each time you've said it.
I think so.
Turns out I forgot to write down when all the films are. I think I did it in pen in me book. Hang on. Yes, here we go. Don't worry. Professionalism restored. There are, of course, 9 canonical Nightmare on Elm Street movies. A Nightmare on Elm Street, released in 1984, when, you were 2 and I was 1.
Yep.
So we're probably a bit young for it. Probably shouldn't have watched it then.
Yeah.
That was directed, of course, by Wes Craven, the dead famous Wes Craven, who also, as you may know, he did Scream, didn't he? Wrote and directed the Scream movies.
Yeah.
And then I think this is one thing I didn't write down, but I think I'm right in saying then all the sequels he didn't do. Someone else came to do the subsequent slew of slasher sequels. So you've got A Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge, that came out in 1985. You've got A Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors, that came out in 1987. A Nightmare on Elm Street 4, The Dream Master, which came out in 1988. A Nightmare on Elm Street 5, The Dream Child, which came out in 1989. Yeah. Then they changed it up a bit, and it was Freddy's Dead Freddy's Dead, The Final Nightmare, in 1991. And by that point, I think the general consensus was it had gone a bit shit.
Yeah.
Hence, he was they killed him off. But then Wes Craven returned to helm 1994's Wes Craven's New Nightmare, which we'll get to. Then there was this, they'd been planning it for ages, and then they finally did it, Freddy versus Jason.
Which is where my famous quote comes from.
His famous catchphrase.
Yeah.
Do you want to do it again?
You ugly little prick.
That was really good again. Really good. And that we, well, I didn't bother watching that because we already did it when we did Jason movies last year.
I did though, because I wanted to see you ugly little shit, which is what he actually says, just in case anyone writes in.
That is your favourite. That's probably the highlight for you, I guess, of the whole series. And then there was finally a 2010 reboot, remake of the original A Nightmare on Elm Street. The first time that Freddy wasn't played by Robert Englund. And spoiler, it was a bit shit, wasn't it, that? It was rubbish.
We'll get to it. Sorry, I don't know why. That's like Alan Partridge, isn't it?
Keep it in suspense. Okay. But then after that, they didn't. Little cameo appearances all over the place in video games stuff. But yeah, no more proper canonical films other than those.
He still haunts my dreams, though.
So you're making like a new movie. You're making sequels every night in your mind.
Exactly.
You're an old Fred.
Lucky I'm still here.
Would you agree with me that Freddy Krueger is like, he's what the big three slasher movie franchises? We've done Halloween, we've done Friday the 13th, this is the third, and I'm
having
it, they're
the
big three.
100% yes.
Yeah.
And I would maybe even make the argument that Freddy Krueger, the character, is the most iconic of all three.
I think you might be right.
In terms of, maybe not the best, but in terms of just how well known he is, I think everyone surely knows Freddy Krueger.
Yeah, Halloween. Every Halloween, you'll see umpteen people dressed in his iconic, stripy jumper, and it's apparently a fedora that he wears. I'm not very good with the names of hats. But that's what it is. And the claw hand, of course. He has one homemade little glove with blades on it, doesn't he? Lovely fella.
Scary guy.
Well, I remember, like I don't know, my first proper missus in my late teens. She was absolutely terrified of Freddy Krueger.
Really?
You know, she thought that was just the scariest thing that existed in the world. Like, you know, don't make me watch that.
Well, for me, this is why I mean, like I said, it's up for debate. If you don't agree, then fair enough. But for me, it was just the one I remember as a child. That was the one everyone kind of spoke about. Like, you always got some kid who claimed he'd seen, you know, oh, I've seen it. It's, you know, the most scariest thing ever. And you'd hear someone say the 1, 2, Freddy's coming for you. Whoa. It was infamous. And yeah, so that's why I always kind of associate Freddy as being like the number one slasher star, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, and I suppose if you think about those other two, you've got, I suppose Jason is fairly memorable in his, you know, hockey mask kind of way. But he's actually a shit boring character, isn't he?
Like, yeah, and also wasn't even actually in the first film as the kind of hockey mask, which we've covered in the archives. So.
You're right, you're spot on. So yeah I would say, and whereas Jason had that sort of muddled beginning where it's like... You know, not even in the first film, comes in the second, only by the third film does he even get the hockey mask. Like, Krueger was completely, fully realised and established in the first movie.
Yeah.
Even, the same actor played him for all that whole back catalogue.
And pretty much in the first scene, really.
Yeah! So it's like he was a really kind of fully formed slasher icon.
Yeah.
And I don't know, even Michael Myers, like, I mean, we talked about this when we did Halloween a couple of years ago. But, I like Michael Myers.
Yeah.
But, again, he's a slow-moving, lumbering bloke who doesn't speak and you never see his face. So there's not really much room for characterisation there either, is there?
No, I think Myers and the Halloween, first Halloween in particular, probably my favourite of all these kind of iconic slasher horror films. But
Have you seen the new one yet?
Not the new one, no.
I'm going watching it on Halloween when this comes out.
Awesome.
So I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be good. Well, it might not be. It might be shit, but I hope not.
So, yeah, personally, if I was to rank them, I'd say Freddy, most iconic, followed very closely by Michael Myers, and third place Jason, I would say.
Yeah, I to be honest, I think I'll give you that.
Up for debate, though.
Absolutely. And just, I suppose I was slightly projecting forward, thinking if we're still alive next year and doing the Halloween special again, it's like, oh shit, well, what do we do as a slasher? I suppose you could do Scream, couldn't you?
Yeah, yeah. But I think you're right. There's been a theme established, hasn't there, where we've kind of, every year we've done one of these big classic horror franchises, slasher characters, and yeah, I'm not sure. Yeah, maybe Scream, Ghostface,
or the Chucky child play ones.
But they're not. I agree though. I think Halloween, Friday 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street are the big three. So
not Leprechaun with Warwick Davis.
Yeah, definitely. Actually, yeah,
I would watch that. I've never watched
Big Four. Big Four.
Maybe we should have done that. And actually, just worth mentioning, I think Robert Englund, I think he's the joint holder of the record for like playing the same horror character from the start the longest number of times. Yeah. I think it's shared with the bloke who played Pinhead and someone else. And to my shame, I've now lost that bit of information. So write in.
Hellraiser films, actually, I suppose we could do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, stumbled upon the answer. There you go. But anyway, back to Freddy.
Yeah.
Just to quickly explain what he is for anyone who doesn't know. He's a dead, burnt paedophile.
Well, it's funny you should say that because I think in the they actually change it. They were going to make him a pedo, but he was actually just a child killer because they didn't. I think there was something to do with some cases going on. But I think in the reboot, he's kind of established as a pedo. But the other things, he's a child killer, not necessarily a child molester. I don't know why I'm sticking up for the guy.
This was kind of the point I was going to make, right? So I know we are definitely going to slag off the reboot when we get to it, because for a number of reasons, it's a pile of shit. But when you read about it, one of the reasons it gets slagged off is because people thought it was horrendous that they fully officially said Freddy Krueger was a paedophile who was burnt and killed by the townsfolk, going vigilante on him because of what he'd done. And then, of course, what Freddy Krueger does is he comes back from the dead to haunt the dreams of the town's children and kills you in your dreams, which is brilliant because it's a great setup for, instead of, you know, arguably slightly pedestrian killing lots of people with a knife over and over again, he can just do any old bollocks because it's all in a dream. So it's all like surrealist, wacky, but we'll get to them. So in the original, you are right, it's not explicitly stated that he's anything other than a child killer. And although Craven wrote him as a paedophile, I think that was changed, as you say, for reasons of like, well, to make it just slightly less horrendous and unpalatable, I suppose. But, you know, the guy is meant to be an absolutely evil, monstrous figure. And killing children is still pretty bad.
So yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, well, you know, it sounded like I was his defence lawyer or something. Like, well, he did that, but hey, I want these charges dropped. But, yeah.
So you get these, like, people are sort of, like, as we're, Freddy Krueger, infamously, especially as the films go on, he gets more and more, like, quippy and jokey and a bit silly. But he does have some funny one-liners. And it's almost like people are saying, oh, well, if this guy's a paedophile, then it's not funny. But if he's only murdering kids, then, a catch.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
I just think the distinction is a bit weird to make. Well, anyway.
I'll go on a little side story here. There's I think it came out in like 2007, something like that. I'll look it up. The Rambo, it was kind of I think it must have been the fourth Rambo film. He'd been gone for years and they made a new one. And he goes into the jungle to rescue these, like, they're like these kids that go into like war zones to, you know, to provide charitable aid and stuff.
Oh, right. Okay, I haven't seen it.
Oh, have you not seen it?
I've only ever seen the first Rambo.
Oh, right.
Do those next year.
The bad guy in that, he's like the leader of this sort of militant group, but they're, you know, they're real bastards. And you see him at the beginning, like he's making the prisoners run across like minefields for like entertainment. And he's just a real horrible guy. And then about two thirds of the way through the film, just in case you didn't hate him enough, you will then suddenly find out that he's also a paedophile. So it's like, just in case you
just
didn't
to double
want,
down on it.
Yeah, just in case you didn't want Rambo to kill him, it's like, we better put this in just in case they feel any sympathy with him. And yeah, I don't know why.
Because I feel like we spoke about this before. Didn't they do it in like a really throwaway way as well? Like they just mentioned it in passing. Oh yeah, and you know, and he did that as well. Better kill him then.
Who, Freddy or Rambo?
Rambo. Sorry. No. Oh no, we've just accused Rambo. Yeah.
Rambo wasn't.
Rambo was not. We can confirm that John Rambo. Well, we can't. Well, oh god. Yes, maybe. Maybe this whole section should go in the outtake. So Freddy Krueger, burnt by the townsfolk, dead. You know, skin all melted and unpleasant. Well, actually, his skin fully melted away because he was just some bones, isn't he? He's just a dead skeleton that they. I think they've in one of the films they sort of reveal that they buried him. They didn't bury him. They just lobbed him in the boot of a car. And then, like, drove the car to the local dump and left it there, I think. So Freddy, very much a dead man, but he makes his comeback in dream form. Mm. Did he wear the stripy jumper and the claw hand and the fedora hat when he was alive? Or did he just get them when he was dreamified?
I think the claw hand, because there's a whole thing about the boiler room. I think he kills his victims down in like his boiler room. And you see at the beginning, we've watched so many now, I should have made some notes, but you see him at the beginning creating this claw glove. So I assumed that was something he made when he was alive to torture his victims, but I could be wrong.
I'm having that. Whereas the hat and the jumper clearly are two... fun looking for him to have got. He couldn't have gone away with those. He would have been arrested by the fashion police.
Hey.
For looking good. the first movie. You said about making notes. I've written. Shall I read you? This is the extent of my notes, right?
Yeah, go for it.
I've gone. It started quite professionally. Strong and atmospheric start. Much slower paced, as you'd expect. I guess you know old school horror films slow build. But then I've written, upside down people on the ceiling and shit. Cool. Girl in the body bag is really fucking scary. Depp's death is hilarious. Because Johnny Depp is in the first
Johnny
one,
Depp.
Isn't he?
Young
first ever film. It actually says in the opening credits, it's like, I'm introducing Johnny Depp. Which is cool. I've written, I like John Saxon. So he was the bloke who was in Enter the Dragon with Bruce Lee. There was like two other hero characters and he's one of them. He plays like the town sheriff or something. One of the vigilante burn Freddy because he got, you know, they got let off on a technicality. The ending is like Home Alone, I've written.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit bit where he's on fire. Saxon didn't seem that arsed about his wife when she died. I've written Hellraiser influence. I just wondered if Hellraiser was influenced by this whole idea of beings that torment you in, you know, sadistic ways. And then I wrote, the woman getting pulled through the front door at the end is clearly a dummy.
Yep.
Which is really laughably bad.
Really,
really bad. That's it. That's the Nightmare on Elm Street summarised. And that's the end of the podcast.
So the main note I had was Tina, who's friends with Nancy, who is kind of the final girl, that whole trope.
Yeah.
Tina is the first one to get killed. And her boyfriend, Rod, gets the blame for it because he's over there at the time while her parents are away. But there's just this brilliant bit where Rod's a bit of a tearaway. Like he's like a kind of 1980s greaser. And Johnny Depp's character says something to him. And he pulls a knife on him, like it's such. It just like did all greasers. Like surely they say knife crime's bad nowadays. I'm not trying to make a joke about that, but back in the day, like these American films with their greaser characters, did they all just stab everyone all the time? Because every time you see a greaser in a film, he pulls a knife on someone, a flick knife.
It's like they all look like John Travolta and they all have, you know, ridiculous slick back hair and they all definitely have flick knives that they're just itching and clearly they just use them on their mates
laugh. And pull them out at like for just the most
drop of a hat
innocuous things. Like it was just a bit of banter and he pulls out a fucking knife.
Yeah, like his girlfriend's reaction to it is like, oh, come on, yeah. You. Stop.
Imagine
don't
that.
Stab your friends.
Imagine that if we were like acquaintances and you came over to my house and said something and I pulled a knife out on you. Like,
threatened to kill me.
Like, just,
I mean, you,
just crazy.
You wouldn't do that, but, to be honest. You know, you have.
I've done it many times, admittedly.
But that's because we're good friends.
Exactly.
That's because we're good friends. That's okay.
But yeah, that was my major takeaway from the film. No, actually, I've got to say, I think conceptually, I think Nightmare on Elm Street is absolutely brilliant.
It is ace, isn't it?
Granted, if you watch it now, if you're a younger person who's never seen it before and go back and watch it now, yeah, you can pick lots of holes in it and, you know, the special effects and everything like that maybe haven't held up that well, although they're not bad. But yeah, I think conceptually it's such a good idea because...
Totally agree.
You then what can you do about it? It's in your dreams.
Exactly, and it also leads to this brilliant thing that they do revisit in some of the better sequels of... Oh shit, and we can't go to sleep.
Yeah.
So the tension isn't just, oh, when's the killer going to strike? The tension is, how do the protagonists avoid nodding off?
Yeah.
And it's like everyone's desperate for him to sleep. So in no other film are these people are terrified of sleeping. And everyone's like, oh, come on, you just need to grab a little nap. And here's a sedative. Like everyone's desperately trying to make him sleep. And everyone's fucking nodding off in class. They're all just narcoleptics. But
you know how much I like to sleep.
I do. It's
a bit of a running joke, actually, about how lazy I am.
He could go. If you're just a thud, it's just Liam's head smacking onto his desk.
So quite frankly, I think I would just be like, ah, fuck it. I'm going to sleep. I can't be arsed. Exactly. He's going to kill me. I'm not staying awake for him.
You'd be one of the first to go.
Definitely,
to be honest. But yeah, some of those, because it gets really muddled throughout the series, and sometimes it's like, oh, by appearing in your dream, he's convinced you to kill yourself. So people are like, you know, cutting their own throats, which kind of makes a bit more sense to me. But most of the time, and even in the very first one, they just bin that off, and it's like, oh no, he can just kill you.
Yeah.
So you're just lying there, and then suddenly some slash marks appear on your chest, and then blood goes everywhere, and it's so much blood.
Oh,
like
God,
when Johnny Depp's death,
that is just
it's like, what, about 100 gallons of blood just splattered all over his bedroom? It's just hilarious
because Johnny Depp and Tina, the first one, when they get killed, like they're kind of, they're levitating up because obviously Freddy's like lifting them up, and the witnesses or the viewer, us, you just see, it cuts back to them actually asleep, and you just see them kind of levitating up and being thrown against the walls. And that's why Rod, her greaser boyfriend with the knife, he gets to blame for that first murder because he was in the room. Who else could have done
it? And because he's constantly
knifing people,
flick knives at people. And so Kruger, we meet him in the dreams, and he's cackling away, having a whale of a time. Robert Englund is fucking ace, isn't he? As Freddy, he's so good. Like he just looks like he's having the best time ever. Just every line is just delivered with such relish, and he just looks like such a nasty, horrible, evil piece of work. But apparently, he's like a lovely bloke.
He's a real gentleman, isn't he? Like a proper old school gentleman. But I just think the first one, the idea, the concept is really good. And then
brilliant.
The other weird thing about the first one as well, Nancy's mother, the whole kind of suddenly she's like an alcoholic subplot, I guess, because she was one of the
of the vigilante killers. So it's like a daughter's complaining about, oh, a man in a hat with a claw arm is tormenting me in my dreams. Do you know anything about that mum? And her mum's like, oh, no, don't know who you could possibly mean. Like,
and then you kind of see a knowing look between the parents, like, oh, that sounds like that bloke we killed.
Nah.
Yeah. I think the first one holds up. I think it's very good. Brilliant concept.
There's a bit where one of her mates who's died already, the main girl, Nancy, is like in another dream sequence, sadly for her. And then she just sees a like a body bag at the end of a corridor, like a blood smeared.
That was when she falls asleep in school, wasn't it?
And then the body bag is like lifted by the feet, but by an invisible force, and then just dragged away off out of shot, leaving a big blood smear behind it. And it's like, whoa, that's ace.
And that's the good thing about it. And I actually don't think they played on this enough, or at least not. I don't think they played on this very well, perhaps, is the whole kind of dreams, obviously, you know, can be quite surreal. And
yeah,
so it, that also makes it quite creepy.
Yeah.
You know, when things look kind of normal, but not. And
yeah,
so she is in school, but why is the corridor completely empty? And what, you know, just weird things like that. And I was actually thinking, and throughout the whole series, I imagine David Lynch doing a Nightmare on Elm Street films, because the dream sequences would be fucking amazing.
And you're right, like, it's the surreality. Like, there's some of the best bits of the scary dream sequences is that moment when, oh, she's nodded off and this is a dream and she didn't realise and we've just realised. Like, that's almost the best bit of the film
Because you're, that's right, the film, you're kind of, oh, is this a dream or is this real? And they definitely lost that, I think, throughout the series, because it got a bit too wacky. But yeah, certainly at the beginning, when you see, you know, the little girls playing jump rope and singing the tune, there's a very eerie quality to it.
Yeah, it's almost like you can't criticise the later films for not having any ideas.
No.
It's just the ideas that they had were really stupid.
Yeah.
Silly, but kind of entertaining nonetheless. Well, as usual, we'll jump around all over the place, but maybe to sort of briefly skate over the sequel. And often, it's interesting, you may disagree, normally when you get a long-running franchise, it's like the earlier sequels are better and they get progressively worse.
Mm-hmm.
I actually think Nightmare on Elm Street 2 is a bit crap, and then some of the other sequels were a lot better. But what do you think?
I think Nightmare on Elm Street 2 was... It was entertaining without... necessarily in the right way. What's the word I'm looking for? Sort of unwittingly, it was more entertaining than.
Yeah. Okay.
It was built because there's actually been apparently it's got quite a lot of attention in recent years this is a quote. I'm you know, not being homophobic. It was described as the gayest horror film ever, and instead of a final girl, you've got a guy. And actually, this guy actually was gay, and he kind of blames Freddy too for you know, sort of forced him to come out. I could have that slightly wrong.
At a time when it was not, you know, would have been very difficult, because what was it, 1985?
Because it's very homoerotic. The second,
yeah. Well, there's that whole weird bit where it's like I couldn't even tell how much of this was meant to be in the. There's a scene with his teacher, like his gym teacher.
Yeah.
And his gym teacher, who's, you know, a bully, horrible git, who's always, you know, give me 50 push-ups and just treating all the kids like shit. And then, the main character's like befriended that other lad who they start off scrapping with each other, but then they become friends. And even that could be, be interpreted in that way.
I'll get to that, yeah.
And then there's a scene where the coach comes in, but he's dressed in all that sort of like, what would you call it? Like almost like S&M kind of leather stuff?
What happens is the main character, because he's having these dreams where he's almost... Because obviously Freddy, you know, is supposedly no more. He starts to... Freddy, to get his power back, he kind of has to possess somebody. And so this guy's having these dreams and he kind of feels like he's turning into Freddy Krueger.
Yeah,
so,
Krueger's like, kill for me, kill for me.
So he tries to stay awake, and one way he tries to stay awake, he just goes, I think it starts off as like sleepwalking, and he ends up in this sort of S&M bar, and he sees his gym teacher dressed in all, you know, the sort of leather gear. And then the weirdest thing, the gym teacher, almost like, you're busted, kid, you're coming with me. Takes him back to the school at, you know, in the dead of the night.
Weird.
Makes him do loads of laps in his pants, and then presumably is about to rape him.
And I thought that was a dream. So this was happening. Oh, he's having a bad dream about his PE teacher doing. But it's, I don't think it is. No. Is it? I think it's meant to be, because then the coach gets attacked by Freddy.
But is it Freddy? Is it the kid? Because the teacher goes to get some rope, presumably to tie the kid up and do stuff to him. Because the kid, he makes the kid have a shower. And then the kid, we think, kills him, you know, as Freddy or the kid. It's just really bizarre. And then there's another bit as well where he goes to his girlfriend's party, who looks exactly like Meryl Streep, by the way.
She does. I genuinely thought it was a young Meryl Streep. Yeah, but it's not.
He goes to her party and he's like, you know, stuff's happening. It's getting, you know, heated. And then he has kind of a vision of Freddy. So he decides to do a runner and he goes to that, his mate's house. Like he goes to him when he's in bed and they kind of sleep in the same bed. So again, there is sort of like sexual.
A whole kind of subtext. Yeah, maybe. Yeah. That you, I'm sure you're onto something. His missus is remarkably tolerant of him.
Well,
from her perspective, he's a raving lunatic who thinks he's being tortured in his dream.
Who she's only known for like a short time, yeah.
Exactly, she's only known it for about 2 weeks.
And at the end of the film, when the guy is fully kind of in Freddy mode, she appeals to him by saying like, I know you're in there, I love you. It's like, you've only known him like a fucking week. And during that time, he's been absolutely insane, potentially killed loads of people. So what do you see in this guy? I don't know. And he's clearly...
And he's a gay man who's having an affair with his PE teacher.
Yeah, but anyway, bizarre film. So I kind of found it entertaining, but I think as a Nightmare on Elm Street film, yeah.
A bit of an odd one. I did write down Exploding Mad Canary. Do you remember that?
Yes, yeah. Because the whole boiler room thing, so it started to get really hot everywhere. When you knew kind of Freddy's presence was coming. And yeah, the canary just explodes from heat. I don't know.
I didn't know whether that was meant to be that the canary was having a bad dream and Freddy got it. Or
the canary was turning into Freddy. And then
Kill for me, canary. And then before it could peck someone's eyes out, it sacrificed itself instead.
But no, I thought it was entertaining, but maybe not in the intended way, yeah.
And just one other bit, sorry, is at the end when they sort of, I don't know, with that really nice Meryl Streep lookalike and the crazy lad, they sort of go to kind of confront Freddy or whatever bollocks. They were just random dogs with human faces on.
Oh, that was creepy, yeah.
Why were they there?
Yeah, that was creepy, yeah.
And it looked like to film it literally they just got some dogs and put creepy masks on the dogs, it was just horrible.
Yeah, no, that was very nice. But I enjoyed it, but perhaps not.
We'll rank them at the end, like we always do. But Nightmare on Elm Street 3 is regarded as a good sequel.
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
I thought it. I think it was just good and well. It just made more sense as a story than the second one did, and arguably than the first one did. It was like there's a load of kids. They're all getting tortured in their dreams. They all. You know, one of them dies, so the others are all worried they're going to die. Therefore, they try not to sleep. But because of these issues, they've all been incarcerated in like a kid's, what would you call it? A psychiatric facility for troubled youths.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like the disbelieving nursing staff versus the kids. And the kids almost had like a kind of Stephen King, It, Band of Heroic Teens vibe about them.
And it turns out one of the teen we kind of get introduced to at the beginning... She has a unique power where she can pull other people into her dreams.
Yes.
Which is
Patricia Arquette, isn't it?
Yeah.
A young Patricia Arquette.
And so she uses that, they kind of band together and use that to sort of defeat Freddy. And it's a good idea. And I think it's generally pretty good. There's some slightly ropey bits in it again.
Really stereotypical kids and you know what I mean? There's like, there's a dweeby one and a tough one and all that.
And also we see Nancy again. She's like a counsellor there because obviously she knows about the whole sleep thing. And she's obviously the only one that believes them. And she's the one that kind of comes up with the idea to use Patricia Arquette's power to kind of bring them together. And within the dreams, they find they each have their own kind of unique powers, which starts to sound a bit silly, but kind of makes sense because if you're in a dream, you know, you
would, wouldn't you? You'd give...
Why couldn't you do all this crazy shit? But slightly strange that they've only all got one unique power. That's kind of a bit like, you know, But still, no.
Yeah, a little bit cheesy.
Quite a good idea. Because there's one kid who likes Dungeons and Dragons, and he become in the dream world, he's like a wizard almost, isn't he? And
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of, they're all kind of likeable. And there was, you know, some other good... Lawrence, a young Lawrence Fishburne, isn't
yeah,
it, as well?
Yeah, that was another pleasant surprise as well.
And John Saxon reappears as Nancy's dad.
Yeah.
Now he's like, I don't know, is he retired or is he just like a
washed up alcoholic, like it boozy. Ruined his life, didn't it? And the moment he Freddy got killed. Yeah.
And I thought there were just some really good, like, this was probably the whole series, the best realised kind of like dream. So one of them... One of the kids used to have a heroin addiction, so Freddy turns his knives into needles and he's like, hey, well, you know, want another fix or whatever. Like, that was a horrible thing to do. There was a bit with a tricycle or something that melted while he's looking at it. That was pretty cool. A rotten, like a cook, you know that whole thing of like a feast, but the feast has gone rotten. Mm. Like that's been used. So there was like a pig with an apple in its mouth and it's all mouldy and maggot infested. But then it comes to life and starts moving around.
Yeah,
so it was like, oh, Jesus. And then, the best bit, my opinion, was the kid who in his dream, Freddy pins him down to his bed, slices his wrists open and extracts his veins.
Oh, and uses him and like then, a puppet, yeah.
Yeah, uses his veins as like a marionette to walk him out of the window, and to everyone else, it looks like he's committing suicide.
Yeah, and of course, to genius. The disbelieving nurses, that's more fuel that, you know, they need, these kids need to be drugged and put.
Yeah.
So it was, and I forgot about this actually. The whole other kind of subplot with the weird, creepy ass nun.
Oh, yeah. Which I've still got a bit. Is that Freddy's mum?
That is Freddy's mum, who, and this is a brilliant line. I'm going to get it up to make sure I don't butcher it. One second. But yeah, it's Freddy Krueger's mum. Of course, you don't really find that out until the end. And she appears to one of the counsellors, one of the adult counsellors, in a variety of different places. And it's like he turns around and suddenly she's gone. And she's the one who suggests you need to bury his body. Is that right?
You're spot on. That as in, that becomes why, in a way, why John Saxon's back in it, because it's like they need to, you know, what did you do to
him?
Right, and then they find out he's been lobbed in a car boot and they have to go and get the bones out and bury him properly.
And it turns out the backstory is that the nun was locked in.
Oh, yeah.
Like the institution with 100... you know, patients who just violently raped her, like, for the entire weekend, and she gave birth to Freddy Krueger. And the quote she has is that he's the bastard son of 100 maniacs, which I just thought it was a really good line. But what a horrible backstory.
And obviously it's, you know, for anyone listening who doesn't know this, that's not how pregnancy works. You know, you can't have multiple dads. But it's brilliant, isn't it? Yeah, the bastard son of 100 maniacs.
And then his actual, like, his adopted dad was abusive, apparently, you find out. But yeah, she was really creepy, I thought.
Yeah, it almost gave it another different horror angle.
Yeah.
Like a bit of a trope again, isn't it? Like creepy but it was just something a bit different.
Yeah, I think it worked.
Yeah, I do too. And just so much of this film I thought was just really, really good. Maybe this is a good point, and I guess while we've touched on the whole kind of rape content, to just touch on the sort of misogyny angle. So one of his most memorable quotes in any of his films, and I did find this funny. It did make me laugh. You've got one of the girls as nodded off in front of the telly. And obviously, like with all of them, you don't know she's nodded off. She's just sat there, and then she gets up, and I think she sees something moving in the screen, so she kind of walks towards the screen. It's, you know, a white noise. Psh. And then Freddy Krueger's hands, including the claw hand, sort of bulge out from the sides of this wall-mounted TV. And then his head sort of bulges up out of the top of it. And then he just says to her, "Welcome to primetime, bitch!"
Yeah.
And then grabs her head, smashes her head into the TV screen to kill her.
Yeah.
And again, from all the nurse's perspective, it looks like she smashed her own head into a TV screen and died. So all worked brilliantly, looks cool. But it's it is, I suppose, it made me feel slightly uncomfortable, the extent to which there was an element of like, hey, I'm, you know, saying horrible things to women and treating them like shit and swearing at them and ha ha ha. And so I don't know, but I guess that's a trope of a lot of horror and slashers that I guess they would argue they can, that's, no, that's the villain. The villain's being villainous and it's countered by the final girl who outlasts him and survives.
Yeah. I mean, the first one, there's a lot of sort of sexual kind of undertones, like the claw coming up between her legs when she's in the bath.
She's nodded off in the bath. Yeah. How did we not mention that? Yeah.
But this is what I said about Freddy, and this is why the "you ugly little shit" comment always makes me laugh, is because it's not enough for Freddy just to kill you. He's got to make you feel like shit as well. Like, he's got to break you. Like,
yeah, he's not... Like, his backstory makes him... If you just listen to his backstory, obviously he's a horrible person, but there's an element of like, oh, a bit of a tragic character, you know, he's born in this terrible way. But he doesn't behave like... Oh, until you get to the bloody reboot. He's not like chip on his shoulder moaning about it. Oh, I'll have my revenge on all of you because I'm so sad and miserable and I had a bad life. It seems like he's... loving it, doesn't he? He's just like every happy fellow.
But to everybody, he's cruel and nasty and
gleefully like, cruel.
Exactly. But obviously, with women, it does come off. It's perhaps more memorable as well. I don't know that, you know, that's where you feels a bit more misogynistic. But
yeah. So and then I suppose that, you know, if you don't want to see men committing violence against women in the film, then don't go and watch a slasher movie. But so it's a tricky one, isn't it?
To know,
and we talked about this a bit on our episode about the remake of Black Christmas as well, which again has an interesting take on that whole trope. So that's three movies in, and Freddy is not about to stop being horrible to people and killing them in increasingly creative ways. Because we head now into Nightmare on Elm Street 4, which is. Which one's this? This is not the one with the kid. The Dream Master. God, I don't remember anything about this. That doesn't bode well.
This was the one where it's a direct... I know they all are sequels, but it's very much tied into number three and that it kind of revolves around that whole sort of those dream warriors again.
Yeah, it's like he comes back to kill them all off, including...
Yeah.
Patricia Arquette, that's not played by Patricia Arquette anymore.
Which was a bit confusing at first. But yeah, basically, the dream guys, you know, they're still around and she suspects that Freddy's coming back, but the other dream warriors, and they can all kind of hang out in their dreams and stuff. They're like, nah, he's not coming back. And then obviously he does come back and kills them. And I thought it was, I wasn't that keen on this one.
No, there was one bit, I think, didn't someone have a fear of insects and she then did a blooming Kafka-style metamorphosis into an insect? That was pretty cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, I had its moments, but I think whilst the third film, obviously, as I said, the original film, conceptually brilliant, the third film had like quite a good new take on it. And this one just felt, again, a bit like the second one, I suppose. We've got these leftover ideas. Let's just bring these guys back.
Let's crank out a
bit forgettable. Why?
Why have I written flaming piss dog called Jason? You'd think I would remember that scene.
Flaming piss dog. That is so. His one of the Dream Warriors' dogs. This is when she thinks Freddy is coming back. The dog kind of jumps into the dream and bites. Can't remember who he bites, actually. He bites one of them, anyway. And then you see the dog again, and he pisses, and it sets fire to, you know, something. And it looks like he's pissing fire.
Is the dog in
a dream?
Is the dog sad?
No, the dog...
Is the dog in on it? Is the dog like Freddy's mate? Like,
kind of feels like it, yeah. But then he runs off, so...
So this is the one where Freddy gets a pet, in other words. Yeah. Maybe they should have gone with that.
They should have, yeah.
He could have got one of them dogs with a human face on it.
Yeah.
It
was. I didn't think this one was that good, really.
We touched on like Hellraiser and whether I don't know whether Nightmare on Elm Street may have had any influence there. It is the other one that's just worth a look at. Like, oh, you know, a band of kids fighting an evil demon in their dream that, you know, tortures them in dreams. But it came out, I think, in 1986 and was kind of written before. So, like, it and, in other words, it and the first Nightmare on Elm Street were written at the same time. So they didn't, neither of them ripped the other one off. Isn't that weird? A bit coincidental that they're so similar.
But in it, it's not really their dreams, though, is it?
It's not as clear a cut as that.
Yeah.
I don't think. It's almost like they just hallucinate Pennywise every so often.
It's when they're alone, isn't it?
We can't believe we've never done that. Oh, we did Stephen King, didn't we? Yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street 5, this is the one where... is the surviving girl from Nightmare on Elm Street 4 is now pregnant... with the child of the surviving boy, so it's like both of them survived, and Freddy's trying to, is he like trying to convert the kid while it's in the womb into his kind of protege?
I didn't really like this one, but kind of, it's basically the end, isn't it, of the dream warrior arc.
Yes, which, he had some moments. This is where they get a bit, start to get more and more wacky with the dreams. So this is the first time I think you see Robert England appearing in a dream without the Freddy makeup on. So I think...
That was four.
Oh, sorry.
Right, yeah, that was wrong, she then. Wakes up in the nurse's office and the nurse is Robert England.
And she looks Robert England with a wig on. Yeah. And you're like, that nurse looks, you know... a bit masculine and also like Freddy Krueger.
Turns around and then it is Freddy Krueger, yeah.
Brilliant. Oh, so this film hasn't even got that in its favour. Wow. Doesn't it have that bit where that lad who's dead into cartoons and drawing, basically his dream is like that aha video where it's all like black and white sketches moving around, but instead of it being, you know, take us away... It's Freddy Krueger just chopping him up. Yeah. Well, I thought that was quite fun.
Yeah, they definitely... And this is where I think the problem with some of these sequels comes in. It's almost like they had lots of really good ideas for funny deaths. A bit like, say, if you created a Mortal Kombat sequel based purely because you had some good ideas for some fatalities, or just a rip-off of Mortal Kombat, but then you didn't bother... making the actual fighting part of it any good.
Yeah, the game was shit.
It's a bit like, I feel like some of these are a bit like that, where it's like they just had these like quite funny ideas for creatively killing off these teens, but not really much to go with it. But I don't know, maybe I'm being... by this point I was getting Freddy fatigues like these. So.
And they were so released so close together. But there is, to be honest, that I've just remembered, thanks to my crap notes again... this does feature my favourite bit in the whole entire franchise, which is Freddy's been... I can't even remember what happens to him. Let's say burnt or whatever. In other words, the characters think they've defeated him and he's crumpled into like just some tarantulas. But one of the tarantulas has got his jumper on.
Yes, yeah.
it looks like they really did it. Like, they put a little jumper on a real-life tarantula so it could scuttle off, and that was, like, Freddy surviving and getting away.
But there's another one in one of the previous films as well where they do something slightly similar to that, where something's got Freddy's jumper on. I'm trying to think
what... Have you ever see anything wearing a stripy jumper? Even if it's a cute little, you know, just cute little spaniel in the street, go and boot it into the road immediately because it's probably Freddy Krueger.
The car at the end of the first one, when it's all kind of weird, sort of dreamlike, it's the happy ending, and she runs out to meet her friends and gets in the convertible, and then the convertible roof closes and it's the stripy jumper. Do you remember that? Before the mum gets put in. But I'm sure there's another one as well. But yeah, is good, I must admit. I do like to see his jumper on random things.
On random household objects and tiny animals. Ready to move on to the utterly bananas,
absolutely
batshit,
bonkers,
stupid sixth one, which is Freddy's Dead. The final nightmare. Where'd you start with this one? At the very opening, you know they always start with like a... they establish this thing, and loads of films do this, with like a pretentious quote. So it's black screen, quote appears, some music plays. And so far they've had quotes from, I don't know, like Edgar Allan Poe.
That's right,
saying sleep is the most terrifying, you know, probably some Lovecraft one or whatever. So this one has a Poe-faced horror quote. And then it has a second quote attributed to Freddy Krueger that's just, welcome to primetime, bitch.
Amazing. Like,
that's the opening quote of the film. So sets the tone.
Brilliant.
What happens in this?
The only bit I really remember from this is the video game bit.
Yeah, me too. I was just, please, fire away. Please take us through the laughably stupid video game bit.
It's just, again, like I said before, just thinking of creative ways to kill these teens. There's one scene where it's like, these video games are popular now, you know, Mario and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so you get a kid killed where he's being controlled like a sort of 8-bit video game character. It's just absolutely bonkers.
They're like boinging him around, and the kid's like jumping around the house, and other people are looking, oh, what's going on? Just stupid. And it goes on for ages, that bit. There's about 15 minutes of Freddy just playing this little pretend NES or whatever it is.
And this is when... And it kind of did happen, but this is when, as a viewer, you watch it and you think, Christ, come on now. This is...
Yeah, what am I... Why?
It's time to put this, you know, series...
Franchise
out of its misery. Yeah, it's getting too silly now.
They spent ages as well. One of the kids was deaf or, you know, hard of hearing and had like a hearing aid. And again, at least 10 solid minutes of Freddy just doing like hearing-based jokes. Like, there was one where he was, I think something like in the kid's dream, Freddy cranked up his hearing aid to ridiculously sensitive so that sound became his enemy. So like if any noise sounded, you know, he would suffer immense pain. And then you think, oh no, what's he going to do with this? And he just he stood at like a great height above the kid and he just produces a pin, like drops the pin. And the kid's like, no, and does this massive flying dive to like stop it from hitting the floor. Breathes this big sigh of relief and then Freddy drops shitloads of pins.
And this is what we're saying about Freddy just being a complete arsehole, isn't he? He's like...
Bastard.
Just kill the kid, like, you know, use your little knife and kill him. But
at one point he's doing his claw hand on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
Just making it it's stupid. But
and this is the one where basically you find out Freddy, you know, long lost daughter and
oh yeah. He had a kid all along and then she kills him.
Yeah.
So that's it. Freddy's dead, the final nightmare, franchise is in the bin.
So that's it then, yeah, there we go. We finished. Oh wait, well there's more.
Wait, what? And the next instalment was 3 years later, and this it's really worth watching this because you can see exactly where Wes Craven's kind of head was at the time, because this is shortly before he wrote and directed Scream. Mm. So this is where you hear words like meta, you know, it's not even a word, is it? Well, it is now. Is it a word? Anyway, a prefix. So it's in this movie, what's her name again? Oh, the first girl, Nancy. She is in it, but play as the actress playing herself. So like John Saxon, who's dead in the movies, he's in it because he's not playing the character that's dead. He's playing John Saxon, the actor. Wes Craven is in it as himself. Robert Englund is in it as himself, not as Freddy Krueger. But the idea is that somehow by getting back, they're all reassembling the cast to make this new movie that Craven's penned. But they're unwittingly summoning, it's almost like a demonic force that Freddy embodies. And so they all start to get haunted and killed off by Freddy Krueger in real life. It's blooming weird, but I thought it was dead good.
It's like you said, you can see the influence, you can see where Scream kind of, how it evolved from this. Especially because in the sequels to Scream, it was quite similar. They were making a movie about those killings and then art imitating life and vice versa. Yeah, so you can definitely see the influences. So this is, I agree, it's worth watching this one.
And Blair Witch 2, we talked about, you know, when we did that episode ages ago. That was another one where it's like the sequel acknowledged the existence of the first film.
Yes, which, yeah.
With mixed results.
Yeah, well, I liked it. We liked it, didn't we?
Yeah, really liked it. There was one other funny thing about this film is, you know when you look at, especially when we did our Friday the 13th, there's like, you can find loads of graphics online about, you know, the evolution of Jason Voorhees. And it's like, you know, iteration one, a little boy. Iteration two, a bloke with a bag on his head. Iteration three, a hockey mask. Iteration four, you know, mouldy with a hockey mask. Whereas if you look at like the evolution of Freddy Krueger, it's just the same all along, except in this film, he's really tall and muscly. And then in the reboot, he's really short. Yeah. So I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah.
Then we've, as we've said, we're not going to dwell on You Ugly Little Shit, also known as Freddy vs. Jason.
Freddy vs. Jason, that was like, almost 10 years after this one. So a long time in the past. And it was something, as we spoke about before recording, that, you know, they had been in the pipeline for a while. And I quite enjoyed it. I thought it was quite entertaining. It's not scary.
No, it's daft.
Daft, yeah. And... But quite funny, and it's got the brilliant line, "You ugly little shit."
Isn't the premise that, if I remember rightly, because I didn't rewatch it for this, isn't the premise that Freddy is trying to kill some kids, but Jason is gegging in on the dreams and keeps killing them first? Or I can't even remember why they end up... why is Jason and Freddy having a feud?
Basically, because, Freddy needs... hasn't really got his powers, so he needs Jason to kill the kids of Springwood. So as they start to think Freddy Krueger's back, they start to believe in him again, thus giving him his powers. But then I think doesn't Jason just end up, like you said, just killing them all before Freddy can, basically?
Freddy's not enjoying... Yeah, before Freddy gets a chance to have a laugh. There is a thing about... So you mentioned Springwood there. We forgot to say that Springwood is the town that, you know, Elm Street is in. Nightmare on Elm Street, set in fictional town Springwood. But there is one of the films, I can't remember which one, where, like, I think Freddy's... He says something like, "Every town's got an Elm Street." And I was like, "Oh, that's good." He's not... Yeah. Like, again, he's not in it. He's not that bothered about this whole revenge against the people of Elm Street thing. He just really loves torturing and killing people.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the word I'm looking for? Scamp.
Well, he is kind of scampish, isn't he, by film kind of 5 and 6. He's lost his...
By number 6, he's just a comic. He's just funny. Yeah. It's like, what's he going to get up to now, scallywag? Whereas in A New Nightmare, I think they made him scary.
Yeah.
Freddy vs. Jason is back to being stupid again. And then, I suppose, neat segue into the reboot, the remake, they really tried to make him scary. Yeah. Arguably succeeded, but forgot to make it in any way enjoyable or fun.
Yeah, just a really po-faced... Really, depressing. Actually find it quite dull. Just dull movie.
Yeah.
And
God.
It's so... I'm not sure, because I'll be honest, I've never watched the Twilight movies or read the books.
Nope, me,
but
me,
I
me
get either. The impression that the style of it is kind of going for that, like, good-looking, moody teens, because it's all like, it's always raining outside and it's dark and they're all, you know, wearing their leather jackets and these really cool...
Looking at each other, seriously.
And the girl who's in it in the beginning... No way does she pass. It's like a... Like, Nancy looks like a teenage girl in the first one.
Yeah, this
this new one is like just a model, you know, like...
Yeah, like a 26-year-old model.
Yeah, and I know that's always been a joke in horror movies. They're always, you know, older people playing teens. But yeah, it's just really... It reminds me, there's a Family Guy episode where they do... It's like three different stories where they... kind of try to reboot Family Guy, and one of the reboot ideas is, again, it's ripping off Twilight, is like a teen sort of horror style show where all the teen kids are like really, like Chris Griffin's like really buff, and so Neil,
right, that's the other thing, yeah,
and they go to they hang out at nightclubs with like grunge bands playing. yeah. which they're yeah. clearly not old enough to go to because you have to be 21 in America. And
depicting like fans of alternative music as the bad kids yeah. is another thing they always fuck up in Hollywood movies. It's like that every time you want to show, oh, bad, you know, drug taking, edgy, evil kids will stab you with a flick knife. They're always like, you know, they've got like alternative
yeah.
music clothes on. It's like, no, those kids were like the nice nerds. It's all the jocks who were the horrible yeah. anyway.
But yeah, it's just really, yeah, just a really moody,
dark,
boring flick, isn't it?
And grimdark. Oh, and I didn't think, to be fair, I think the guy who, so to my shame, I've forgotten the actor's name, but it's the bloke who played Rorschach in the Watchmen yeah. movie. Who I thought was really good in that movie, and I think he does a perfectly, you know, good effort with a crap, boring script.
Yeah, Jackie Earle Haley.
Well done. That's it. That's his name. And I think he's a good actor, but yeah. there's just not much you can do with this because it's hard to have fun in a role that's not meant to be. He's not meant to be fun. He's playing it straight faced as a yeah. vengeful ghost of an evil paedophile come back to murder the kids that he's already tortured in life. Like, it's a rough sell, that, isn't it?
And I understand. I completely understand why they thought, right, we're doing a kind of reboot. We need to get back to basics. This is a really iconic character. These were really scary films, the originals.
Mm.
You know, we need to make it scary and we need to forget all that sort of comedic stuff. But, yeah, just lost... It lost all of its personality somewhere. Yeah. And it just, yeah, just really dull. I really found it quite hard to watch it. Boring.
Like, we've done 3 years in a row of these slasher marathons and I've always been, like, pleasantly surprised. Oh, actually, this doesn't feel like that much of a slog. I'm kind of enjoying these. And then, but then every so often there's one or two films and you're yeah. just like, God, when's this crap going to be over? And this was a bit like that.
Yeah.
I'm afraid. So, not recommended. Should have just kept Robert Englund in it.
Yeah.
In his old, you know, even though he's getting on a bit. Like, there's a bit in, sorry, in Wes Craven's New Nightmare where she goes on a TV show as a guest, like a, you know, like a chat show. And they're like, so, whatever the actress's name is, when, you know, everyone's asking, as if anyone was asking this, which they weren't, but everyone's asking, is there going to be another Freddy movie? And then they reveal that they've got Robert Englund there as like a surprise guest. And then he bursts in full Freddy garb, and he's just giving it large to all the live studio audience. He's like, you are all my children now! It's so good. It just seemed, it's like a really fun watch, whereas this was the opposite of that.
Yeah, yeah.
Shall we rank them then?
Yeah, you go first. You go first.
Well, see if we can get a bit of a consensus right. The worst film is the remake. Are we agreed?
Yeah, I'd agree with that.
Sorry to everyone involved in that.
Because it's not really got any redeeming qualities, while even the crap sequels at least were funny.
I've got funny bits in, whether they're intentional or not.
So I would, yeah, I agree with you there. I agree with you.
Second worst, I am going to say, is Freddy 4, The Dream Master.
I was thinking the same, yeah. I was thinking
couldn't
the same.
Really remember anything about no. it when we talked about it, so it must have been a bit crap. So, we may disagree on this. I don't think Freddy 2 is very good.
I
would probably have that lower than I reckon you
I would definitely have that higher. I would probably have maybe next, it would be, I'd agree with the two we just said, and then I would probably go 6 and
Freddy
then 5.
Five oh,
and
so
six.
You're going
six. Yeah, one or the other. I mean, 6 so maybe did have that dead funny bit in it, but... So I would put those two next, and then I would probably go 2. But
so maybe, yeah, 6, 5, and 2 next in a varying order.
I'll agree with that. I'll agree with that.
I kind of had a soft spot for 6 because it was just so shit that it was funny. Like, it was
agreed.
Funny bad
yeah,
instead of
agreed.
bad. So then we're into the good ones, the top 4. And I think I would say the next one for me would be Freddy versus Jason, which might be your favorite.
No, I would agree with that. I'd agree with that.
Because I'm not saying it's a good film. It's just a daft, funny, daft film. And then I think the next three are all legitimately... like they're not just, oh, it's good for a Freddy movie or it's good for a daft horror movie. It's like these next three are actually good films that you should watch. And I am going to not go for the wussy make the original the best. So I'm putting that third.
Wow.
I'm giving Dream Warriors second spot because I think it's a really good, hones in, refines the premise to perfection. And then I'm saying Wes Craven's New Nightmare is the best. There you go. Eat that.
I would go... I'm going to be the wuss boy and go Nightmare on Elm Street as the best. And then I'd probably say, I don't know, this is tricky. I'll bow to you then and I'll give you New Nightmare second and then Dream Warriors 3.
I just think all three of them films are just dead good. Like proper horror classics with a great villain. And oh man, yeah. And actually, interesting, that Nancy, the actress Nancy, is in those three films. So she deserves some credit as well as Robert Englund because she must be doing something right to be in the three best ones. What's she doing now then?
Good question.
I'm going to have a look.
Yeah.
Let's do her the honour of being bothered to get her name right for a
second. Yeah, that's a fair point.
Which
yeah.
would be the least we can do. So Heather Langenkamp as Nancy Thompson. And she's American film, television and voice actress, producer and prosthetic makeup coordinator. Pretty cool. Let's have a look. Career, further success and recurring work to present. She's going to an anchoring role in the Mike Flanagan. So she is still in stuff. She's in some Netflix series called The Midnight Club that's coming out next year. She does some voiceover stuff. Cameo appearance in one of the Hellraiser movies. So it just sounds like she's generally been very busy and successful. So good on you, Heather.
What was your favourite kill? We won't rank them all, we'd be here all night, but...
yeah, let's do the next 4 hours.
What was your favourite kill in all of the films?
I did like some of the really stupid ones, like that aha video cartoonist chopped into paper shreds, because it's just so stupid. He did some horrible one to a lad on a motorbike, where he sort of like made him merge with the motorbike and then drive into a... So that was really... disgusting. I will give it to the Johnny Depp's death just because, you know, it was Johnny Depp's debut and there was so much blood that it was hilarious to witness. What was your favourite kill?
No, I would do like... Bless me.
Was that you? Are you all right? Is Freddie there?
I don't know what that noise was. I'd agree with that. I think if we were going to come up with it together, that would, yeah, that's a worthy winner, I think.
He did that one, didn't he, where he came out of someone's waterbed?
Yeah.
And then he was like, how's this for a wet dream?
That was the one where the guy's waterbed, he pulled up the kind of mattress and the topless model from his poster was swimming underneath, like enticing him in. And he goes into it and then gets killed. That was quite good, actually. That was quite good. Well, just for the line, really.
I suppose there's an element as well of like Freddie. He's done this multiple times, hasn't he? Where if he's got a virile young man, his preferred method of killing him is usually to pretend to be a really hot woman.
Yeah.
And then imagine your horror as a teenage boy, you know, with in the company of a lovely lady who seems really keen, and then she turns around and it's Freddy Krueger. Yeah. Like that show, shit, that's
cut you off,
not
it?
What I wanted.
Actually, I quite like the puppet one. That was quite good.
Yeah, that was very clever. Yeah. Very clever and sick and horrible, whoever came up with that.
There you go.
That's blimey. Well, hey, this is it then, end of series 2.
Wow.
You never know, this could be the last episode we ever do, because we're on a night out, aren't we, at the weekend together. We might, what if we get pissed up and have a fight? We might not be speaking to each other in a week.
You ugly little shit.
What if you might, one of us might die and haunt the other one in his dreams? There's all manner of reasons that this show could fall apart. But I hope not, because we've got loads of plans for it. Yes. We've made a little list of stuff we haven't covered yet as well. Oh, some good ones in there. So what are you going to do with your time off, Liam? Because this, of course, is our full-time job.
Yeah, probably same as usual, really. Actual work and...
Loads of sleeping?
Well, lots of sleeping, really. I don't know if I'll be able to now, after all that.
Scary stuff. Yeah. I reckon you will.
I think I will. As I said, I would rather Freddy kill me than miss a
than not sleep
a minute
say on a snooze.
What about you?
Working, pretending to work, my various creative projects that pass
you,
as
you,
work.
You got anything on the horizon? Anything coming out soon?
I'll tell you what might come up. I reckon I can say it in here. I'm working on a new novel that's not ready enough yet to talk about, but I've got a couple of audio books hopefully coming soon, which I'll, if they land in the coming weeks, I might lob the trailers for them on the feed of this.
Awesome.
So we might still have a little bit of content despite the show being on hiatus. And I've got a short story in a second cyberpunk anthology coming out very soon, and that's already been announced. But whereas, so I had a story in that first anthology, and I did a very po-faced, serious, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street reboot style story, and then in the second one I've done a really daft, silly one about a Swedish bodybuilder / actor called Tungsten who uses classic. His cyberpunk attachments to solve crimes.
Brilliant. So, yeah, can't wait to read it.
Might enjoy that. Hey,
I've also got a proposition for you, actually. We'll talk on the weekend. Let's just say Hollywood's calling.
Okay. This either means
calling to tell us not to come, but
to tell us to stay away.
Yeah.
Wow! Well, I'm suitably tantalised by this. I'm trying to think how this could mean not what it appears to mean. Hollywood Hogan is presumably involved. I'm going to get leg dropped. That's it.
Well, thanks. We haven't actually said if Freddy got in or not.
Sorry. Bloody imagine if our last ever episode forgot to do the ending. Yeah, well, it's neither of us is pitching to the other. We've just done it as a bit of a joint pitch to ourselves. And I will... Well, I tell you what, we will hand over to Freddy himself to announce whether he is worthy of a place in the Hall of Pain. What do you think, Freddy?
You ugly little prick. Of course I am. Bitch.
There you go. You heard it straight from the great man.
And now I'm going to start killing all the other residents. Where's that slender man? You ain't going to be so slender when I finish with him. Why? Because you're going to feed him up? Like, surely he'll be... Anyway. There you go, buddy. He's in.
It's quite hard coming up with quips and puns for murders, isn't it?
Yeah. Like, you thought I'd be used to it by now.
You're obviously just one of those po-faced killers who phones it in. So that's it. The Hall of Pain under wraps for the winter time. But we'll hopefully be back, I don't know, in the new year or something. Listen to this sinister space. And as we always say, as of about 5 episodes ago, in the meantime, don't have nightmares, or if you do, make sure they're very Freddy Krueger sponsored good ones. Goodbye.
Couldn't leave it well alone, could you?
How sweet. You ugly little shit.
Well, that is it for Series 2 of Dark Natter. Hope you've enjoyed it and had a good laugh with us and maybe even learned at least 2 things maybe over the course of the entire series. I'm sure we put some actual facts in there. Or hopefully just had some recommendations for good dark fiction that you can check out yourselves. I would like to thank all the people who've been guests in the second series. So that is Jacob Stephen Moore, who came on to pitch The Thing. We had Ryan Heyman talking about The Last of Us. We've had Anna Mossicat talking about Ghost in the Shell. Isabel Blackthorne to talk about Ian Banks. Angelina Allsop talking about children's dark fiction. We had Donna Morfitt talking about Mark Tilbury. We then subsequently had Mark Tilbury on talking about S.E. England and her excellent novel Babalenka. We have had Matt Goodwin to talk about Silence of the Lambs. Thank you to him too. we have had the inimitable Brian O'Gorman to talk about George A. Romero and the Living Dead movies. We have had Hayden Killian, of course, friend of the show and of us, talking about Dark Disney. Another of our mates, Rob Yates, talking about Jaws. Matt Adcock to talk about Hardware, which I'd never heard of. That was a good recommendation. And also another recommendation that I am very thankful for was Mr. James with Lake Mungo. I think... Oh, and of course Jack Killian on our 50th episode special about The Undertaker. Thanks to you, Jack. And how could I almost forget, last but not least, our most recent guest, Nick Whittaker, who came on to talk about Nightbreed, which weird mask I have bought and I'm wearing for Halloween fancy dress. So thank you to Nick for that as well. I hope I haven't forgotten anyone, except one person I have forgotten is, of course, Liam himself. Thanks, Liam. Been loads of fun making this daft show with you. Hope we get to do some more. Right, before I become too emotional, I'll now leave you all in peace to enjoy the rest of your Halloween or whatever day it is if you don't listen to this on the day that it's out. I am John Richter. If you want to find more of my stuff, then have a look at www.john-richter.com. That's John is J-O-N and Richter is R-I-C-H-T-E-R. So yes, there's plenty more of my fictional ramblings are out there in the world. And yeah, thanks again for listening and speak to you all very soon.